Congressman Kevin Cramer is here for the Talk Radio Town Hall, and we'll start taking your questions and comments right now at 800-228-0550. I understand you're crisscrossing the state on 94 today. How do the crops look, Kevin? They need a little rain, you think?
Well, a little rain in the southeastern part of the state certainly would be in order from what I can tell, although there's it's still looking pretty darn good, Scott. But I have got to tell you the story. Now, my wife, Chris, as you know, is in charge of my life, and I appreciate that very much. And she's driving. We stopped at the mandatory stop at Tower City, at the Tower City Cafe there, and bakery, because she has to get a frosted cookie. It's required. Anyway, so I walk into the men's room. This is full disclosure. I walk into the men's room, and a guy in the men's room says to me, "So, are you on your way to the radio then?" And I said, "Well, as a matter of fact, I am. I'm going to be on an hour early." He says, "Well, are you going to do it in your car then?" I said, "I am." And he said, "It's an hour early, huh?" So I said, "Well, yeah, but," I said, "what? Where are you from?" Well, he's a truck driver from Mineta. Now, is North Dakota not the best?
It is the best, not only because I've had many of those same conversations at that very same place with just salt of the earth, wonderful people that make getting up every day, no matter what you're facing, a lot easier here than anywhere else on the planet.
It's incredible. It's just so cool. It's great. So anyway, now, I just had to share the magic of radio.
That is, and we're glad he's out there and so many others. We're blessed to be the most listened to radio program on the Northern Plains, and it's a great honor that we take very seriously, and the program's yours. That's why we call it What's on Your Mind, and you get a chance to talk with your congressman every week, which is great, and it's as simple as a phone call, so can't get any better than that. By the way, a week from today, we'll be in Watford City. We're going to do something a little different. We're going to take this weekly talk radio town hall and combine it with one of the Coffee with Cramer events, and so we want to invite folks to join us in Watford City. We'll do that next Wednesday, and we're doing it for a full 90 minutes only because with commercial breaks and whatnot, folks will get shortchanged otherwise, because you usually do the Coffee with Cramer events for at least an hour, don't you, Kevin?
I do, yes.
Yeah.
We always schedule it for an hour, and it always bleeds over, as you know.
So mark that on your calendar, a chance for you to see this firsthand up close of what happens, and we're looking forward to that as well. And tell Chris next time, switch it up. Instead of the frosted cookie, try the strawberry rhubarb pie. At the Tower City Travel Plus.
Well, anything with rhubarb, we're all for. No, the pies are hard to walk by. And usually, Scott, what we do is when we are on our way home, we stop and take a pie, an entire pie, with us. That's generally what we do.
I've done it a lot myself. It gets me in the good graces with my Chris, which is known as Maria, who runs my life, thankfully, as well. So I'm reading your mail. Anyway, we better stop talking about pie or Todd's going to get hostile. Let's go to Craig. On the road.
I get hostile? Wait a minute here.
550K Fire. Go ahead for Congressman Cramer. Craig, you're up.
Hi, Congressman. In April, I called you on a heavy road use tax that the IRS charges all of us for it. Now, up till now, I've given $8,400 just in fuel taxes in North Dakota, Minnesota, and Montana through my IFTA and all that stuff. I'm wondering why it is that we still have to pay the heavy road use tax when we have every other tax involved with this. This is nothing but double dipping. It's been like that forever. Sure, you say you can write it off. It's tough enough when you have to be competitive with everybody out in the industry also. And I want to know what we can do about getting rid of the IRS on that heavy road use tax. $550. Yeah. There's over 1.7 million truckers. Somebody's sucking up a lot of money, and they don't seem like they've got much to show for it. I'll hang up, and I'll let you explain.
Sure.
Thank you.
Sure. So Craig's question is, of course, about the heavy use tax. Now, as people maybe recall, a couple of weeks ago, we did pass an extension of funding for the Highway Trust Fund to continue the road construction and maintenance until May of next year. Between now and then, most likely probably between January and then, the Congress will have to take up a long-term highway bill. The Highway Trust Fund is already upside down, which is why we had to do an extension. There's not enough money coming into the fund to pay for the construction, the maintenance of our interstate and other highway system throughout the country. And in North Dakota, we see it in spades because, of course, we produce way more goods and services than our infrastructure can handle. And that's not just highways, that's rail, that's pipelines and everything else. But back to Craig's point on the heavy use tax, it's hard for me to imagine a situation where, well, it's going to require a comprehensive overview and a means of funding that's going to have to involve both cuts in some areas on the spending side as well as perhaps some new sources of revenue. I'd like to replace some of that with revenue that comes from two sources, one being repatriation of profits that are stranded overseas as a result of our very unfair and very uncompetitive global tax structure. The United States, of course, taxes businesses at a much higher rate than any other productive country in the world. The other one, and the more important one, I think, being the use of royalties from increased drilling and recovery of natural resources that are under federal jurisdiction, usually under, of course, federal lands and offshore. There are over $123 trillion worth of oil and gas reserves owned by the federal government trapped as a result of regulatory policy. That would be a more direct and, I think, more relevant funding source. Now, you're also going to hear from a lot of people that want to raise the gas.
Hold that thought, if you would, Kevin. We're up against a break here, so hang tight. More coming up with Congressman Kevin Cramer. More of your calls on the Talk Radio Town Hall straight ahead. This is the Talk Radio Town Hall. It's Wednesday. And Wednesdays, we're brought to you this first hour by our friends at the North Dakota Petroleum Council. Find out more about them at NorthDakotaOilCan.com. NorthDakotaOilCan.com. I love that because a lot of oil cans being filled these days. Barrels, actually, a million barrels a day. Pretty extraordinary. What does that mean? Oh, about 60,000 jobs in the industry. It means about $30 billion in economic impact, and it means national security. Open up a newspaper, watch an evening newscast, and know why our national security and oil are linked. And the quicker we move that needle further and further of energy independence, the choosier we can be when it comes to international conflicts. Congressman Kevin Cramer is here. If you have questions or comments, 800-228-0550. Just one programming note. It never fails when Congressman Cramer is on. He's on here every week. But we always have calls that come in later in the half hour and stack up, and we don't get to all of them. And it's a little lighter in the first half of the hour. So if you have a question or comment, now is the time to get it in. Quick recap, if you would, Kevin, on the visit of the two cabinet secretaries that were part of that quadrennial energy review in Bismarck and then took a little tour on Saturday. I was struck by the comments from the administration folks that sort of painted a rosy picture of how great things are. And people in the room sort of looked around like, do they have some alternative view of reality? Did you catch that, too?
Oh, there's no question about it. And it's always great to have the administration, you know, in the state and have two cabinet secretaries. And both of them are men I respect a great deal. As part of it, it was especially rewarding. But there wasn't a lot of listening going on. As you noticed, there was a lot more lecturing. And I really felt like it was, I think it was missed opportunity. But I don't think they're really all that interested in hearing from the, you know, from people on the street, from what I gather. They are more interested in an agenda. And it never became more clear than when the young man from Dickinson got up and asked the question about, shouldn't we be using energy as a security tool, you know, and reestablishing, and these are my words, paraphrasing, but reestablishing America's strength in the world. And I couldn't resist but to sort of run down the menu. I mean, I just think, Scott, a year ago this month, John Kerry was in Israel setting the table for peace negotiations between Israel and Palestine, and today he's over there, you know, negotiating a ceasefire. And they've spoken more harshly about Israel in this defense against Hamas than they have about Hamas itself. He was in Iran negotiating a deal on the Iranian nuclear program, validating their right, if you will, to enrich uranium, and then he extends it by 4 months while they continue to build bombs. You've got Iraq, you know, the president ran two campaigns on we're going to get out of Iraq, and now he's issuing, you know, ordering airstrikes and sending soldiers over when he probably should have left the residual force there in the first place, as the general suggested he should do. And you've got all that in our border that's, you know, become a magnet for illegal aliens. And they, this guy gets up and gives a lecture. And by the way, never mind Vladimir Putin, using his unilateral status, if you will, or his exclusive status as the supplier of gas to Europe as more of a tool, while we sit on, and our Secretary of Energy, and I confronted him on it right there in front of everybody, sits on 20-plus liquid natural gas terminal applications. We could be using our energy as a national security tool rather than missiles, and this guy gets up in, from the White House and gives a lecture about how we're still the strongest country in the world, and I'm like, I think you're missing the point, and I certainly believe that you're missing the reality that we are no longer the nation of influence we once were, and we should be using energy to reestablish that.
No question about it. Cletus in Tioga, listening on KTGO. Go ahead for Congressman Kramer.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going well, thank you.
I got a question for you, a simple question. Last night we were out for supper, and we heard that Obama put a 55% on inheritance tax. Is that true?
Did Obama put it on? I don't know that it's true. I've never heard that, but there is an inheritance tax. Of course, I believe we ought to eliminate it. I personally have always been on record believing that inheritance tax is punitive and it's double-dipping on the government's part.
Right. You know, that's what we heard. We didn't think it, we never heard anything about it either or not, so I'm just calling.
I wouldn't blame that on Obama. That's a tax that's been in place for quite a while, and it ought to be eliminated.
Alrighty. That's all.
He doesn't support eliminating it, however.
Okay.
Anything else, Cletus?
Oh, that should do it.
Thanks. Glad you're listening. Call again. Oh, let's go to Curtin Bismarck, listening on...
Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That's all right. What did you want to say?
I was just going to say, inheritance tax is especially hard on North Dakotans because we're an agricultural state. We have a lot of legacy businesses, small businesses that are passed on down family to family, and many people find themselves having to either sell their farm or sell their business just to pay the taxes on their inheritance, and that doesn't do anything for productivity. It certainly doesn't keep families on the farm or in the business. So I find the inheritance tax to be one of the most illogical and, frankly, punitive and immoral taxes in our code.
Curtin Bismarck for Congressman Kramer. Go ahead, you're next.
Good morning, gentlemen. Kurt,
good morning.
How are you?
I was just curious about a couple of things, Congressman Kramer. First of all, you said that John Kerry was over in the Middle East and kind of laid it at his footsteps. My history tells me we've been fighting over there since 1954, and no Republican or Democratic administration has been very successful in dealing with it. Two, you say that we're no longer the most powerful nation in the world. That surprises me. I'm not convinced of that. And three, you're going to compare the authority that Vladimir Putin has to a free society to ours? Vladimir Putin can do any damn thing he wants in a communist country. And four, what do you propose that we do with our energy for security measures? We're a free country. I hear people all the time telling me, well, we should not put our fuel out on the international market. Do you want to lead that charge?
Well, let's start with the last thing first, because I think all of them pretty easy. With regard to what I'd want to do with it is we ought to produce all that we can in the most responsible manner possible. And, yes, we ought to be the world leader both in use and export. Remember, we are a global marketplace, and we have the opportunity to both supply the United States as well as be the supplier of choice around the world. Whenever you open up more markets, you have two things. One, you're going to produce more of the product, which creates jobs and wealth right here in our own country. And two, you enhance your influence in the world by being the entity that has the product that you're making available. Remember, when the cartel had, that being OPEC, had sort of the exclusive right to this, they used energy to manipulate the world market. I'm talking about using energy to simply manipulated by having a world market and having competition and bringing price down and being the price leader instead of the price taker. The other thing is when you're producing more for your own people, we then would no longer be dependent on the Middle East for our energy. And we, of course, then increase our influence over our own affairs as opposed to being at the under the thumb of dictators.
More of the Talk Radio Town Hall coming up with Congressman Kevin Cramer. Stay tuned, folks. This is the Talk Radio Town Hall. We're coming to you live and direct from the chamber, actually the Greater North Dakota Chamber Policy Summit. And we have a couple of hot topics we'll tackle next hour that are before the Policy Summit taking place here at the Radisson. Andy Peterson will join us from the Greater North Dakota Chamber, plus Board of Higher Ed President in North Dakota, as well as the Chancellor, Larry Scogin. So all coming up on the program. Continuing our conversation now with Congressman Kevin Cramer, 28 before the top of the hour. Your calls, questions, and comments on the Talk Radio Town Hall. Welcome for him. Were you finished with Kurt and Bismarck on his...
Not totally, because the Vladimir Putin statement, I think, is particularly telling. Vladimir Putin is the exclusive, Russia is the exclusive supplier of gas to many of our allies in Europe, including the Ukraine, and well beyond. And we sit on the world's largest supply of natural gas. The Department of Energy has been sitting on about 24 applications for liquid natural gas terminals. Applications are completely filled out. The environmental studies are all done, and all that's waiting for is for the stamp of approval, and it ought to be expedited because we ought to be producing that gas in places like North Dakota and the Rockies and all over our country, and we ought to be exporting it so that our allies don't have to rely on a former KGB guy for their source of gas and energy. And that has so many ramifications to it, not the least of which is our economic and jobs creation for the United States, but also gets back to that security issue. And he had a whole host of other things, and I could go through all of them, but it would take the rest of the show. But yeah, do I blame this administration to a great degree? You're darn right I do. No other administration has ever suggested, ever. It's been the policy of this country for years that we do not legitimize Iran's right. We do not recognize a right to enrich uranium. And the deal that John Kerry did with Iran does exactly that. That is a very, very different position. And I think look what's going on in Iraq. You see what's happening, Scott, with this administration's notion and understanding of the world. Our president recently, in an interview with the New York Times, suggested that reconciliation between ISIS, which is seeking a caliphate in Iraq and Syria, that reconciling their differences with the Sunnis and Kurds and whatnot, is similar to Republicans and Democrats not getting along in the United States. That is a level of naivety that is scary, at least. And so
I'm with you. And by the way, he also called the ISIS the JV. Remember that? Well,
Exactly. No, this guy he's scary because he's either very, very naive or he's confused about who our enemies and friends are. And I'm not so convinced that's not the case as well. I mean, remember, they referred to Hamas. No, they referred to Israel's response in defending itself against Hamas as deplorable. Deplorable, Scott. That's our friend Israel. And never have they used language that tough. You're talking about the terrorists that are attacking Israel every single day. That's how confused they are about the Middle East.
All right, Bruce in Minot is next up on the estate tax. Before we go there, I do want to ask two pieces of I think, newsy topics. One is, I understand you witnessed firsthand a meltdown by the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, that really hasn't received the attention that it's probably due in the media. And, I heard about it from others. I asked you about it, and you said, not only did it happen, I saw it. So tell everybody what happened.
So we were debating late that Friday night before voting on the border crisis bill, and Tom Marino, who is a member from Pennsylvania, was a part of the debate. He was speaking on the floor, and he brought up the issue of the fact that the Democrats, when they were in control of the House and the Senate and the White House, never brought up immigration as a major issue, and now they're using it as a political tool in this debate about our trying to close the border or trying to secure our border. And while he's literally speaking, Scott, on our side of the aisle at the podium, the former Speaker of the House, and I was just sitting a few feet away, gets up and starts walking down into the well of the House. That's the front part of the House. Stands, and I sort of go, what in the world is she doing? And the several Democrats, and there are probably 20 of them in the room, were going, what is she doing? She walked right over while he was speaking, stood in front of him, started pointing her finger at his face and making these weird gestures. And then when he was done and with his part of the debate, as he turned around to walk to the back of the chamber, she yelled at him, said, don't you walk away from me. And he turned around, and I got very concerned because she was very animated, shall we say. And she got right in his face, and I thought, please don't touch her, Tom. Please don't touch her. And she said, you don't know how irrelevant you are. You don't know how small and insignificant you are. And of course, everybody was appalled. The Capitol Police were concerned, but she's a former Speaker of the House. What do you do? It was one of the most, well, it was the single most bizarre thing I've ever seen on the floor of the House, and I've seen quite a bit in the last couple of years. I don't know what the end result will be. I mean, the video's been floating around the Internet, but I suspect when we get back, she'll have to do some sort of a formal apology, because it was such a breach of the rules and protocol of the House.
Was it, are things that tense there? I mean, why would she react like that?
I don't know. Here's my theory on it. 24 hours earlier, the bill had been pulled from the House floor. It looked like Congress was going to go home without passing a border bill, and she was dancing in the aisles, literally. And I think she thought, my shot at becoming Speaker of the House has been reignited if this Republican majority actually doesn't deal with the border crisis. 24 hours later, she saw all of that slip away as we are about to pass a very solid border crisis bill that secures our borders and repatriates these young children with their families back in Central America. I think she saw her chances go up in flames, and she just couldn't control herself emotionally. It was unbelievable.
Wow. That's amazing. Yeah. And that video is floating around now. If you haven't seen it, check it out. And I wanted you to share that story just because you saw it firsthand. Bruce in Minot listening on KCJB. You're next on What's on Your Mind for Congressman Kevin Cramer. Go ahead, Bruce.
Yeah, thanks.
You mentioned
the estate tax and the fact that farmers have to sell their farms and everything. However, a couple of years ago, there was a fairly exhaustive study that I can remember by both farm groups showing that there never had been a farm that had to sell to pay the estate tax. There's so many other ways to avoid it that only a very, very poor planning would cause that to happen, and there obviously wasn't any.
So if your point is that the estate tax, that farmers have never had to sell, although I've heard businesses, certainly small businesses, that have had to sell to pay the inheritance tax off, but the consolidation of farming has sort of happened probably regardless of whether it was the estate tax or other things. Well, we've seen a lot of aggregation of farms over the years that have led to far bigger farms. And I have to believe that the estate tax, along with other, you know, other economic just sort of trends, have probably led to a lot of that. But that, even that said, the idea that a farm family that, you know, can't simply give their farm to their children, but they have to go through all these other planning, as you say, all these other hoops to avoid paying the tax, I think only verifies the fact that it's a tax that we probably shouldn't have and shouldn't need.
Well, I think we've had it for a long time, and what it does is tax previously untaxed money. And I think it's extremely unfair for untaxed money to be forwarded. I think that a reasonable tax can easily be associated. I think it's gone up to, what, $5 million now or $3 million? And any tax planning easily covers all of that. So there really isn't a problem unless one tries to make it a problem.
Well, I think the whole code is so complicated as to certainly benefit those that are in the tax planning business, and they're real people too, and they deserve a living. But we certainly can make it much, much simpler.
And I agree, Congressman, but that's not the question. The question is your comment about the estate tax, and I don't think it's accurate.
That it's double taxing? Is that your issue with it?
I think it's not double taxing, and I also think it has not caused, according to the Farm Bureau and the Farmers Union, has not caused any farms to go out of business.
Well, I think it's hard to deny that there hasn't been a consolidation of agriculture of farms over the years, and a lot of younger people have gotten out of farming, and other young, probably other younger people have grown their farms as a result of all of the extra expenses that go into farming these days, including taxes. And maybe it's unfair to lay it all on one particular policy, but it's certainly part of the formula that makes it very difficult for people to stay at a certain level.
I can't disagree. The problem is it's not the sole reason. And
sure.
The enlargement of
here's my question, just to cut to the chase here, Bruce. Are you okay with the estate tax the way it is?
Absolutely. I think it should be raised slightly.
It should be raised. Well, I think you're in a minority in North Dakota, but that doesn't mean your opinion isn't warranted. I just think it helps us understand where you're coming from. 800-228-0550, 701-258-0550. Sorry, just going to keep rolling here. John, Western North Dakota, you're next on What's on Your Mind.
Yes, sir. I want to ask you about the federal ag bureaucracy. There's going to be a trial on the east side of the state. Hot Potato Boys, you've heard of that, haven't you, over in Northwood, and they've been farming potatoes.
That was the group that, whether being sued or they're being charged with fraud or something as an insurance fraud as a result.
They stole over $2 million in county from the taxpayers. Mm-hmm. And it takes several years to catch up with them, evidently. But they do have a barn full of potatoes that they intentionally spoiled, poisoned, burned up. And how does this happen now, Congressman? We had this before, you know. We had $10 million stolen by that boy, big land man up north of Jamestown, and I guess he did a year or two in the slammer. How can they walk into these federal ag offices around the state and get these checks cut for $1 million, $2 million?
Got your point, John, and we have a minute for an answer, Congressman.
Yeah, and I don't know how to deal with all of it necessarily, but I will tell you that his point about fraud in the insurance program has been a problem, and we did shore some of that up in the Farm Bill, tried to do more of it. A lot of it, smart people can avoid abiding by the law for a long time, but at some point, they eventually get caught up and. And in this case, it obviously has happened. I don't know the intimate details of the case, so I'm not going to judge it. But there's only so much bureaucracy that we even want to have. And if I understand his point, you'd almost have to have more if you're going to police every single farmer all the time. And I'm quite certain that's not what we need in agriculture. But we do need to have incentives built in that incent people to do the right thing as opposed to the wrong thing. And we do have some situations in our crop insurance program where I'm not so sure that incentives are built the right way.
Appreciate the call, John. Thanks a bunch. Others welcome here on our final segment coming up with Congressman Kevin Cramer of the Talk Radio Town Hall. We're live today at the Radisson Hotel Bismarck for the Greater North Dakota Chamber Policy Summit, which kicks off in about 15 minutes. All right, 11 before the top of the hour, our final segment of the Talk Radio Town Hall, a weekly event. Don't forget, next week we'll be live. You can actually participate in person in Watford City. 9:30 until 11 on the program. So circle your calendar for Watford City next Wednesday, the 20th. We'll be there. Ron and Bismarck's waiting to weigh in on the state tax question, too. Before we get there, I just want to ask about the rail issue. I was with some farmers last night, and you know this is front and center. You were with Matt Rose last week. You invited the Canadian Pacific folks here. This is just front and center right now for producers. I saw something about you pressing the Canadians on their rail performance mandates. Update us on what that means for growers.
Sure. So last March, the Canadian government, through their cabinet, they have a rather unique situation, but their cabinet issued an order issuing these performance mandates requiring the Canadian shippers or the Canadian railroads to move, at least 500,000 tons or 5,500 rail cars of domestic grain per week, and then it established a $100,000 per day fine if they didn't meet those mandates. And at that point, I became very concerned, met with Ambassador Doerr, wrote a letter to Ambassador Doerr saying this is a violation of the relationship between our countries, and to put this on one railroad or on railroads for one country puts North Dakota and the rest of the U.S. producers sort of at the back of the line. Well, last week they extended those same mandates through November of this year, and so I wrote them again and have reached out to both to this USDA, the U.S. Trade Office, a trade representative, and then also to the Surface and Transportation Board, and am suggesting quite strongly that we may have to retaliate. And I hate to use words like that, but if we don't reciprocate with these mandates put on by the Canadian government, we have taken what was a level playing field and skewing it in favor of the Canadian producers, and we have enough things going against American producers without needing that as well. So, no, we did get some good news yesterday. You know, we've been fighting for a couple of months now with the labor unions over in Vancouver, Washington, who've been picketing for a couple of months and made it very difficult for grain inspections to take place at the Port of Vancouver, which is, you know, enhanced the backlog, if you will, of trains delivering to that port. USDA was, in my view, sort of shirking its responsibility. It has the inspection authority there, but the governor was not providing the security to allow crossing of the picket lines. And so we've been pressing pretty hard. Say we, there are a group of about 8 to 10 of us in the House and that represent Midwest and Northwest states. And we got some little victory yesterday in that it sounds like there's been a settlement and the inspections will be able to continue. So that'll provide some relief as well.
All right, back to the estate tax issue. Emailer says, this comes from a CPA, the caller from Minot about the estate tax is wrong. He was saying that it's not double taxation. I'm here to say it is double taxation. Simply put, the money is earned during a person's lifetime and is subject to income tax. As it accumulated, the person dies and the money is subject to the estate tax. It's double taxation, and Congressman Kramer is exactly correct. Thank you, Dave. Appreciate that. And Ron and Bismarck, you're next on What's on Your Mind on this topic, too. Go ahead.
I agree with that caller. To me, now, the idea behind the estate tax is to prevent the feudal system like England had. You take the Ted Turners of the world. He's got 250,000 acres of land in three different states. Upon his death, if that is not redistributed or spread around charities or something like that, in three or four generations, they'll own the entire state of, be it Montana, South Dakota, wherever they're at. And so give exemptions, but if some professional football player that makes $20 million a year decides he wants to buy farmland, a farmer cannot compete. So we have to have an estate tax to redistribute. Right now, the exemption is $5,250,000, and that's $10,500,000 for a married couple. And get it large enough so that the farm type of business can function. But if these extremely wealthy people, the agriculture sector could not compete with that. So we have to have some type of mode of redistributing these large estates so the next generation, we don't end up with a bunch of feudal system or sharecroppers where there's no way they can ever own land. That's my opinion.
Sure. No, he raises a relevant point. And one of the things is, it is important, a fact that he noted is, of course, the $5 million benchmark or standard. That has helped dramatically because, as we know, land is worth a lot more than it used to be. But I guess I'd have a little concern about, the Ted Turner example, Scott, because quite frankly, the estate tax punishes smaller farmers and smaller business owners. Let's say you have an $8 million farm, and it's not hard to accumulate that level of wealth, or maybe $10 million or even more. And in today's economy of land ownership, and that's not exactly Ted Turner. And so disadvantage, that level.
Yes, every time we do one of these shows, a topic comes up where you say we could do a whole show on that, and that's one where I think we certainly could, and I'd love the conversation because
people, by the way. I really appreciate the calls and the emails.
Appreciate it on all sides. We are out of time, but we'll again do this next week in Watford City. And by the way, Congressman Kramer is making his way to a noon event at the Holiday Inn in Fargo. It's called the Politics and a Plate, and the topic is what if there wasn't a Republican House? So if you want to head on out to the Holiday Inn, $15 includes your buffet lunch and a Politics and a Plate.
Scott. I'll be at the Politics Summit after that.
Sounds good. We'll see you a little later.